Good morning. In the news this morning, Anchorage voters appear to be returning incumbent Mayor Dan Sullivan to office in returns from yesterday's election and rejecting a ballot initiative seeking equal protections for gay and transgender residents. About 52,000 ballots were counted by late last night. The election was complicated by what City Clerk Barbara Gruenstein called an unprecedented number of voters. Multiple precincts ran out of ballots late in the day, and election workers rushed to deliver more. Sullivan was leading Anchorage Assemblymember and former police officer Paul Honeman by 59% to 38%, and Proposition 5 asked whether Anchorage municipal protections against discrimination based on race, sex, religion, marital status, and other factors should be amended to include sexual orientation and transgender identity. And last night's return showed that measure failing 58% to 42%. Juneau City Manager Kim Kiefer is proposing a biennial budget that calls for spending about $320 million per year over the next 2 years. That includes the Juneau School District and Bartlett Regional Hospital budgets, both expected to be about $90 million per year. CBJ Finance Director Craig Duncan says the spending plan actually cuts more than $10 million from the current year's budget.
For FY13, the actual number we're looking at is about $318 million. And last year, our total was 330. So you can see that we actually have made some significant reductions in the budget.
Duncan says Kiefer and former city manager Rod Swope made most of the reductions by finding efficiencies in city departments. Certain positions were eliminated after employees retired or quit. Others have been held vacant. But as of a month ago, the city was still facing a projected shortfall of more than $4 million over the next 2 years. The assembly directed the manager's office not to use layoffs or cuts to services to balance the budget. Instead, they authorized the use of one-time funds not to exceed $1 million, additional cuts to operations, and a small increase in the property tax mill levy, not to exceed 11 mills total. Duncan says the one-time money will come out of the city's water and sewer expansion fund, which currently has more than $4 million in it, but there are no projects on the horizon. The manager's budget proposal calls for a mill rate increase of 0.4 mills next year to 10.95 mills total. Duncan says property taxes need to go up anyway because of the Aka Bay school bond proposition that voters approved last fall.
There's two components of the mill levy. There's the operational piece, and there's the debt service piece, the debt service being voter-approved general obligation bonds. And so for FY13, that's the year starting this July 1st, that increase consists of 0.34 mils for operations and 0.06 mils for debt.
If approved by the Assembly, it would be the first mill rate increase in about 10 years. In recent years, the mill rate has been going down. Duncan and Kiefer will present a budget overview to the Assembly's Finance Committee tonight. The Assembly will then hold a special meeting to introduce the city and school district budgets along with the mill levy ordinance. An assembly member wants to set up a homeless shelter at the old CBJ vehicle maintenance shop underneath the Douglas Bridge. As Rosemary Alexander reports, Ruth Danner says the equipment facility could be a temporary solution for a downtown problem that gets worse every summer.
I just feel like you can't keep telling these people you can't be here without telling them where they can be.
Ruth Danner is chair of the Assembly Human Resources Committee, which has been gathering information on Juneau's homeless issue for some time now. As KTOO reported, the committee on Monday heard the results of a recent Vulnerability Index survey. Glory Hole Outreach Coordinator Kyle Rennick told members the goal is to connect Juneau's most needy to services and housing.
We estimated that we probably spoke to about 75 to 80% of who we would deem, you know, the target community, the unsheltered, the chronically homeless, those who are experiencing serious challenges. So I do want to reiterate, this project is looking at one demographic of the homeless community in Juneau.
The Juneau Homeless Coalition estimates more than 500 homeless people in the capital city. The survey indicates those most at risk have been on the streets for an average of 10 years. Rennick says he's still compiling data from the survey and cannot yet recommend solutions to Juneau's chronic problem. Danner believes a long-term solution could be 3 to 5 years out.
We don't even know what the solution looks like yet.
The Assembly has not yet discussed possible solutions, nor are members ready to advocate a city policy. But Danner says Juneau must do something now. She made a motion to the full Assembly to set up a homeless shelter in the equipment shop under the Douglas Bridge.
I want to know what is the least we can do to this building in order to allow for shelter of our homeless and vulnerable citizens.
The city has moved its public workshop to 7 Mile Glacier Highway. The Assembly last year appropriated funds to demolish the old building, and the contract will soon be awarded. CBJ Engineering Director Rory Watt reminded Assembly members that the shop has been used for snowplows, graders, trucks, and other heavy equipment. He says at the least, even a temporary shelter would require a conditional use permit and would have to conform to CBJ housing codes.
I don't have all the details with me, but I know that we do have underground fuel tanks, which is normal for lots of facilities. I'm sure the slab in the equipment maintenance area is stained with diesel and oil and probably has lots of odor issues. I wouldn't be surprised if there were small amounts of asbestos in the building.
Despite the logistics, as well as funding and finding an agency to run the shelter, Danner says it's doable. Assembly members said they didn't want to vote against the homeless, but couldn't agree. Johan Dibdahl put it this way.
We're a long ways from coming up with solutions, and a maintenance building becoming suddenly a shelter. I think we're going down the wrong road.
Danner's motion failed on a vote of 7-2. For at least one more winter, the site under the bridge is to be used as a snow dump. It's part of the Juneau Waterfront Master Plan, which calls for parkland and an extension of the Seawalk. A new facility to house maritime services and port operations is also proposed. In the meantime, the agency that paid for Juneau's vulnerability survey is standing by to help the city find solutions to its problem. Nancy Burke is program officer for the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. She says Juneau is in the right position to identify a housing project now that it has the survey data.
You're the first community I've seen do it frontward instead of backward. Other communities identified their project and then figured out who was going in.
Burke says the Juneau Homeless Coalition should be the city's source for solutions and recommendations for a shelter to help the most vulnerable homeless. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
In market news this morning, oil prices are dropping again with Brent crude at $124.05 a barrel and West Texas Intermediate crude at $102.77 a barrel. The two markets are now more than $20 apart. In metals markets this morning, gold is down over $23, currently at $1,622.40 an ounce, and lead is also down, currently at 91 cents a pound. According to the weatherman today, you could probably leave your rain gear and your snow boots at home, and you can wear your short sleeve shirts for today. The weatherman's calling for mostly sunny skies with a little bit of fog in some patches this morning. High temperature about 50 degrees, mostly clear tonight with low temperature about 30 degrees. Some more of that fog returning tonight and tomorrow morning, and then some clouds in the forecast for most of the rest of the week. No precipitation in the forecast for the next several days. Temperatures between 33 and 52 degrees. Currently 28 degrees at the Juneau Airport, and Alaska Airlines says flights are running on schedule so far this morning. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. I'm Matt Miller with this local news update. First, if you're one of the 14 people currently hearing an assault case in Juneau Superior Court, remember the admonition from Judge Menendez. You'll have to turn off your radio now. We'll have a recap of the case so far coming up. But first, in some of the other headlines, an Anchorage municipal official says an unprecedented number of voters turned out for the municipal election and multiple precincts ran out of ballots. City Clerk Barbara Gruenstein says election workers rushed to get more ballots to the affected polling spots. Anchorage voters appear to be returning incumbent Mayor Dan Sullivan to office and rejecting a ballot initiative seeking equal protections for gay and transgender residents. State senators are expected to vote today on a $9.5 billion state operating budget. The bill would go to a conference committee then, and House and Senate negotiators are expected to be named sometime this week. Senate Finance Committee Co-Chairman Lyman Hoffman says the biggest sticking point could be the Senate's approach to tourism marketing funds, but he says he doesn't expect that or any other difference to cause any big fights. Meanwhile, work continues on a capital budget. Co-Chairman Bert Stedman says the intention is to limit the budget to the same size as last year, including a proposed bond package. A program enabling Alaskans to share their permanent fund dividend with charities of their choice has generated about $2.2 million in pledges. Representatives of the Pick, Click, Give program say 4.2% of Alaskans who filed for their PFDs took part. Pledges are 110% of this year's $2 million goal and nearly 50% more than last year's total of $1.5 million. Prosecution says it was reckless without any reason behind it. Defense says it was an accident, maybe even self-defense. Now underway in Juneau Superior Court is the case centering around last December's shooting on Glacier Wood Drive in the Valley. 36-year-old Kenneth Nalen is charged with first-degree felony assault for severely injuring 33-year-old John Duran. It happened in Nalen's own bedroom, but exactly how it happened is still unclear, even after opening arguments and initial testimony yesterday.
This isn't a question of who done it. It's more of a question of why done it.
That's District Attorney Dave Brower. Everyone reportedly had been drinking multiple beers when the shooting happened.
So you're going to have to figure this out. The state's charged him with assault in the first degree, recklessly causing serious physical injury with a dangerous instrument. Ken Nalen was in his house with his gun in his hand, and he shot John Duran.
Duran had been dragged out from Nalen's bedroom to the front porch where he was laying on his side. Both Nalen and his brother-in-law, John Day, were reportedly over or on him trying to stem the bleeding before EMTs arrived. Brower played an audio recording made by the Juneau Police Department's patrol supervisor at the scene, then Sergeant David Campbell, as he and his two subordinate officers try to make sense of the chaotic scene when they arrive.
There we go. Get him out of here faster.
See the other thing on him.
Faster.
They're working on it.
You have the EMT. Yeah. We get him out of here faster. Get him out of here faster. Please.
That's Nalen pleading for EMTs to care for Duran and get him to the hospital quickly. Elsewhere on the tape, he also apologizes for shooting Duran. Now Lieutenant Campbell said he did not put Nalen and Day in handcuffs because they were compliant, but he admitted that might have been a mistake, considering the nature of the incident last December. Defense attorney Eric Hedlund says Nalen is not disputing that he shot Duran. He wants to show that the shooting was either self-defense, an accident, or maybe a reflex action. Hedlund argues that Duran approached Nalen after drawing a revolver, and as he tells it, Nalen sensed danger and grabbed or reached for the weapon before it went off. The bullet struck Duran in the face and passed through to a wall on the other side of the bedroom. Hedlund recreates the scene with a squeaky courtroom caster chair in front of the jury box, the witness chair, and the judge's podium.
Black. Here's a table, here's the guitar and the computer, and here's the bed. It would just be a couple feet. And then here's the entrance. And here's the armoire, like this, at the foot of the bed. And the closet's behind that. He sees Mr. Duran come out behind, come into his view, behind the armoire, with the gun in his hand, and he reacts immediately. He grabs the gun goes off, Mr. Duran gets shot in the face. Nalen had a cell phone in his pocket. It ended up within the pools of blood there. Nadine runs in there. Oh, my God. Call 911. Ken says, call 911. Call 911. Oh, my God. I shot him. Call 911.
Nadine Baradovich is John Day's girlfriend who was in Nalen's house with her baby at the time. Among the police officers who testified yesterday was Joseph Bankowski, a rookie who admitted walking into Nalen's bedroom and picking up the .357 Magnum to unload it and stick it in his own belt. He did it to safely secure the firearm, but he was questioned by Hedlund for possibly compromising a crime scene and any evidence in the bedroom. Officer Steve Warnicka, another patrolman first on the scene, took pictures of the bedroom where the shooting occurred, but he was questioned about apparent discrepancies in pictures of multiple beer cans and possible movement of a desk chair. Complicating the case for the jury during opening arguments were confusing comments about the gun that was fired and at whom. At least one point, this is how Hedlund described the gun stored in Nayland's closet that Duran knew about.
There's five bullets left in the Ruger. There's one bullet in the, so a single shot.
Well, Brower even said that it was the main witness that got shot by Nayland.
He had just shot John Day, and it's clear that he wished he hadn't.
Nayland appeared very still, had his head down or turned away during most of the trial yesterday and Monday. Duran and Day are expected to testify as early as this morning. A six-man, eight-woman jury is hearing the case, which is expected to last at least through Friday. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for mostly sunny skies for today. A little bit of fog in some patches, high about 50 degrees, and some clear skies expected tonight. And a little bit of fog, low about 30 degrees with some clouds for most of the rest of the week. Currently in the capital city, 28 degrees at the airport. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. In the headlines, Anchorage voters appear to be returning incumbent Mayor Dan Sullivan to office in returns from yesterday's election and rejecting a ballot initiative seeking equal protections for gay and transgender residents. About 52,000 ballots were counted by late last night. Sullivan was leading Anchorage Assemblymember and former police officer Paul Honeman by 59% to 38%. And Proposition 5 asked whether Anchorage municipal protections against discrimination based on race, sex, religion, marital status, and other factors should be amended to include sexual orientation and transgender identity. And last night's return showed that measure failing 58% to 42%. In legislative news, the House Finance Committee will hold a hearing today on House Bill 255, which, if enacted, would ban texting while driving. Jacqueline Estes has more on the story.
The bill would override a court ruling that texting isn't covered by an earlier law that makes it illegal to have a television, video monitor, portable computer, or other visual display in the driver's view. Representative Les Guerra of Anchorage says the bill is about safety.
Roughly 40% of people text while they drive. As dangerous as cell phone talking may be, according to some studies, texting while you're driving is more dangerous. And we have to be able to stick those ads back up on TV telling people that texting is a crime. We have to be able to prosecute these cases. And right now, in a lot of districts where judges have said the law doesn't apply to texting, we can't do that.
The bill's co-sponsor is Representative Bill Thomas of Haines, co-chair of the House Finance Committee, where the bill is headed next. He says he expects it will pass out of that committee and go to the Senate. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
An oil tax bill is finally on the table in the Senate Finance Committee. The panel yesterday released a draft of its rewrite of the bill that the Resources Committee passed to them nearly a month ago. Dave Donaldson has more on that.
The bill has had 18 hearings with input from consultants, the oil and gas industry, the Parnell administration, and the public. Committee Chairman Bert Stedman, a Republican from Sitka, says he anticipates having a few remaining issues quickly worked out and ready for a floor vote by this weekend. Stedman has scheduled one more hearing from the oil industry, but he says he expects they're going to recognize the bill as significant.
This goes to the core of the structure of our oil taxes and addresses some of the bigger concerns that have been pointed out by our consultants. And some of these issues were never even addressed or focused on in either the House version or the governor's bill.
The structural change Stedman refers to is the base of what's taxed. The new tax regime would hinge on the gross value of production, basically the market price of oil minus the state's royalty. Rate increases will be calculated from that point.
And that would be on the gross value before the deductions of expenditures, which helps solve some embedded problems we have in our oil tax structure. We have an exposure now to very high oil prices where the state and federal government could offset a lot of the capital expenditure costs in excess of 100%. By making this non-deductible, that would bring that down to a level of probably into about 65%.
Among other changes in the bill is a removal of all references to what's called decoupling, the statutory link between oil taxes and gas taxes. The new gross value structure means the state would never have to reimburse companies when there were price discrepancies. In another change, the tax rate would increase until oil sells for $125 a barrel. At that point, the rate remains more or less constant. Stedman says there's one more major issue still pending: what sort of incentives it will take to increase production in the Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk fields.
Because quite frankly, if you want to increase oil production, you want to go where the oil is, and most of the oil is sitting in Prudhoe Bay, and Kuparuk would be next. So that is an area that we couldn't quite get our hands around yet, and those discussions are underway.
The House is prepared to deal with the bill once it's finished. Schedules already include hearings on the measure. However, considering that delivery is expected less than a week before adjournment, members are not committing to getting through in time. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Juneau teacher Christy Germain is the new assistant principal at Santikahene Middle School. School district officials announced the new hire yesterday. Germain is was born and raised in Juneau, and for the last 8 years taught social studies and English at the very high school that she graduated from, Juneau Douglas. She also spent a year working at Floyd Dryden Middle School. She backs up Principal Molly Yerkes and takes over from former interim assistant principal Gary Campbell, who has wanted to return to the classroom at Santikahene. And it's that time of year again when the bears wake up from their long winter naps. Over in Sitka, Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Phil Mooney says joggers spotted a brown bear out Halibut Point Road Monday night, and some trash cans have been knocked over in other parts of town. Mooney urges residents not to leave bear attractants out in their yards.
Bird feeders, pet food that might be outside, barbecue grills, garbage that may be left over, had been buried by the snow. Just pick things up and make sure the bears aren't around to spend a whole lot of time in your yard.
Juneau's bear ordinance, adopted in 2004, was designed to keep garbage from attracting the animals. It allows for fines if your trash attracts bears and requires all waste bins be fitted with lids that remain secure if they get tipped over. Mooney says the bears are right on schedule over in Sitka. In recent years, sightings there have seemed more numerous, and local officials have fielded several calls about sightings, disturbed trash cans, and dead chickens. Weather forecast for the capital city calls for some sunny skies for today, with some patchy fog for most of this morning and also late tonight. Temperatures between 30 and 50 degrees, with a current temperature at the airport at 29 degrees. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour.